Ohio, Darius.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Ohio Sumo Podcast. It is late in the night. It's about 12:30 in the morning on a Sunday, and yeah, we just got together. We're recording another interview this evening, and we'll be presenting it obviously in this episode, but. In the meantime, we always like to give a little bit of news and what's going on in the world of Ohio sumo. So, what's going on?
Yeah, so here at Ohio Sumo, we're still practicing our social, our distancing as much as possible.
Sure.
I know Tony, he still is, he still hasn't come to practice simply to... because he has elderly parents that he still has to take care of or what have you.
Yeah, I think he went and visited his parents and kind of wanted to keep his distance from any kind of group activities.
But we still are getting practices in. Sadly, I had to kind of bow out for the rest of the summer, more or less, and because I'm working on the COVID vaccine, so...
Yeah, yeah. Darius is he works in pharmaceuticals and so he's on the front lines of the Operation COVID vaccine. we have been getting together. We've got kind of a standing spot at a kind of this whole time that Ohio Sumo has existed. We have members that are pretty far flung, and so. For a while when it was just kind of us and some guys in Lexington, we were meeting at Four Seasons Gym, where Tony is an instructor, like a jiu-jitsu instructor there. And then we've kind of just been looking for places. And one of our members, Wes Bjornson, found us a spot at a gym, I think near Harrodsburg, Fort Harrod, and so we've been they had a practice there a few weeks ago, and the next one will be this coming weekend. We're looking forward. I'm looking forward to getting back. I haven't been in the ring in a minute, so I'm looking forward to getting back to it. I think that's about all we've got for Ohio Sumo News. We are in the middle of a basho right now. We just finished up day 7, and what do you think, Darius?
Man, so you got three guys undefeated at this point. You have Hakuho, you have our guy Asanoyama, and then you have Mataki Umi. I think now that Asanoyama has become a ozeki, and he's been performing well, I think that kind of put the pressure on Mataki Umi, who had been up in the Senyaku ranks for a long while. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people thought he was going to make that ozeki push. I mean, he has two yusho to his name already, which is tied for the record for most yusho without becoming a ozeki. So I really think that's what he's pushing for, is to push for that ozeki spot. You see Asanoyama, I'm really liking his sumo. He's looking really well. And, you know, I definitely think that he is the most likely candidate for the rope coming up. And then Hakuho is just doing Hakuho-like things right now. Yeah, you probably have more elaboration on the Haku hole.
Oh, well, I think Hakuho has always been enjoyable to watch, but I think for me right now, he's more fun than ever to watch, just because he's always, you know, in the past, you always kind of figured like, oh, he's going to win, you know, but he's at a point in his career where you can see all those little nagging injuries are kind of taking their toll, but he's still just able to, you know, do what he's always done to a certain degree. But it's been fun to watch him kind of shift his sumo a little bit to fit his current conditions. I've had more fun watching him, I think, at this point in his career, because I think right now he's seeing the next generation come up, and I think he's happy for that, and I think he's just having fun at this point. I mean, he's done everything that he could possibly have wanted to do or ever hoped to do in sumo. So I think now at this point he's just riding it out, waiting for those young guys to get up there, and
waiting for that postponed Tokyo Olympics as well.
Yeah.
For a long time, that's been what I've and a lot of the guys in the sumo community have believed. With his father having participated in the last Tokyo Olympics and winning a medal, it meant a lot to him to be able to take part in that as a Yokozuna, you know. So for him to be able to do that, I think he'd still need to be active. And I think that's kind of really what he's waiting on right now. You know, I mean, because like you said, there's nothing left for him to prove. All the notable records are held by him. The only one that really isn't is Futabayama's consecutive win record, and I think that's definitely beyond current Hakuho, I think.
Yeah, I think he, you know, yeah, he has everything to his name, really, and I think he'll, I don't really think there's any argument about the greatest of all time. I mean, it's just the statistics. I mean, statistics are sometimes misleading depending on the sport, but in sumo, you just have to look at that win-loss ratio and just see how incredible. I mean, when he won 86 out of 90 bouts in a calendar year.
And I believe he did that twice.
Yeah, I mean, just yeah. I mean, he's got more 15-0 Yusho wins than anybody.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, he has just been a dominating Yokozuna for so long. I remember when I came into the sport, you know, I mean, legit, I was like, it was more me watching to see who would get second, because it was just already assumed mm-hmm. that Hakuho was winning it every time he stepped on the dojo, you know. So I think it's going to be really exciting to see these new up-and-comers. It's like my guy Asanoyama seeing some other young up-and-comers try and step it up and really see the fruition of this changing of the guard period we're going through. Because not only is Hakuho aging, we're starting to see Kakeru getting injured more often, and he's starting to age a little bit as well. You know, and of course we already have a completely new Ozeki crop, you know. The Ozeki of the past are now all, you know, down in the very low Maegashira ranks right now. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Takeyasu's, you know, he can't really hold up much longer. Tochinoshin is, you know, maybe got a couple more in him. You know, we really don't know. Kota Shigeku, he's starting to fade. Terno Fuji, on the other hand, he could come back and I think be competitive up in Sanyaku again, but you know, it's going to be a journey to, like, you know, get him back to that point. But I think he has the best out of all of the former Ozeki. I think Terno Fuji's in his best. He's looking the best out of that group of guys.
Yeah, that's for sure.
But yeah, I think the future is bright for sumo. Sumo right now is more popular than I think it's been in years, really.
Especially with the international community.
Yeah, yeah, with the international community, and even, you know, I think people are just really, yeah, they're just getting into it, and I think that it's going to be exciting as sumo goes forward with this new group of young guys, and just to see what they can do for the popularity of the sport when Hakuho is no longer the king of the ring, you know. But yeah, so we're excited for the rest of the tournament. You know, by the time you guys hear this, it'll probably be like day 9 or so. But as of right now, at day 7, we're excited for the rest of the tournament. So we've got an interview for you guys today. Who do we got, Darius?
So we have Daniel Avila, a good friend of myself. You know, he was the first guy I ever wrestled. You know, period. And so he's a great guy. He's had some struggles here recently, but I think he's been taking them very well, and I think he'll be able to bounce back and, you know, be very competitive. He's a part of the ethics committee along with myself. He's a former national medalist. He's made it far in international competition at the U.S. Open. I think it was a good interview.
Yeah, I'm excited to give it, you know, present it to you guys in this episode. And talking with Danny, and I mentioned this later in the podcast, or later in the interview. I think he really of all of the people I've talked to in sumo so far, I think on the U.S. side of things, he's one of those guys that really embodies the sport and all of its all of the things that you know make sumo great, and so yeah, I'm excited for you guys to hear the interview. All right, we're sitting down with Danny Avila today, and Danny is a U.S. amateur wrestler from California, and yeah. He is also a past, if I'm getting this right, he was a bronze medalist at Nationals a few years ago.
Yep.
And yeah, we're really excited to have you.
Cool, it's good to be here.
Yeah, so I mean, Danny, you were the first guy I ever wrestled. And I'm so appreciative of you because, like, I was real nervous that day, you know, at the U.S. Open. It's my first time, you know, being that bear in front of other people. And you just spurred me in the ring. You were like, no, come on, get in here. And, you know, you just got me in the ring. So, so what was that experience like for you? What was it like your first time getting in the ring? What got you in there?
At the Open or first time ever?
First time ever, yeah.
Yeah, so first time ever was maybe, it just popped up on my memories not too long ago. I think it was July of 2016. It was my first class down here in Van Nuys, California with Andrew. And so, like, it was me as one other dude that never really stuck with it. And then John Toigo, he competed for a couple years. I know he went to Nationals once or twice, I think. And then Takeshi, of course. But, yeah, so I kind of got lost on YouTube in like that summer of 2016. Yeah. And it led me to some Asashoru highlights.
Oh.
And then I wanted to learn more about it, so I Googled it. And the first thing that popped up on Google was USA Sumo. And then, you know, just scrolling through the website, and I was like, oh, practices every Sunday. And I was like, oh, it's pretty dope. I wanted to see where it was, and it was Van Nuys. And it was only like maybe a half an hour from my house at the time.
Oh, wow.
And so I drove over, checked it out, and that's been kind of – because I was doing college football, so that was kind of – it became my off-season sport was sumo.
Oh, nice. Now, where'd you play your college football?
Cal Lutheran University. It's a little – it's a private D3. So nice. I was active pretty much. Sumo and college football kind of went hand in hand at the same time. So it was like football all through summer and then the fall, and then I would do sumo from the spring on.
Oh, nice.
Now you're a lineman, correct?
I was on the left tackle.
Or, yeah.
Yeah.
So that probably worked really well together, sumo and being a tackle in football.
Yeah, it's funny. I think Konishki mentioned it in you guys' interview, but yeah, sumo helped my football a lot more than my football helped my sumo.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just the way that the sumo training and all that kind of opens your hips and teaches you to glide across the ground. It helps in football so much. I went from kind of an average player to I was like all conference guy,
Nice.
and that was in the year or so that I was doing sumo. So just kind of that's what I noticed.
Yeah. Did your coach, was he like, man, the sumo thing? Was he like, man, I want all my linemen there, like doing that?
Oh, they all bag on me about it just because it's like,
Oh, yeah,
because
I'm sure. Well,
it's
so,
Zago, traditional, so
yeah.
yeah.
Well, football is such a, as probably as comfortable as those guys are, like in the locker room, just kind of like, being dudes and like wearing a towel and getting in the shower and whatever. Like, I'm sure that's one thing, but to like be out on a, to be out there like completely almost naked with a piece of cloth around you, that's probably something that they're like, this is very strange.
Yeah, competing and taking a shower is completely different. But yeah, I don't mind it. I know. My first year, I wore shorts. Like I think me and Darius's first opening, we were both wearing shorts. And after you've kind of done sumo for a while, you kind of transition over to traditional. And it's for me, it's kind of like a little rite of passage. Like you're not a rookie anymore. So you're comfortable with it, but
I years ago, I mean, I started my, I think I mentioned this in the first episode of the show, but I started a sumo club in like 2010 in my little hometown, and there was no way I was getting anybody to like go traditional then, and so like not even take their shirt off. Like it was very, they were very very prude about it. So but yeah, once I discovered the, the federation and like being a part of that and competing, actually, it was like, I mean, why not go traditional, sort of makes sense, but yeah.
Yeah. So you had it seemed like you had pretty immediate success because I remember was it your first open you made it to the semifinals and even had a really good match against Biamba.
Yeah, so there was that first open where I met Darius. That was my first tournament period. Andrew had kind of been talking me up to do it, and yeah, I did pretty good at that one. The Biamba match was definitely one of my favorite matches, lifetime career wise. Just because I lost, but I kind of held my own till the very end, and you could tell that it was an experience thing. I feel like I tried to do an outside twist at the end, and he kind of jumped up a little bit. So I feel like that was the experience kicking in, and that's where the stuff that I was never going to be able to pick up on. And then yeah, I made it. That I fought Rami for the bronze medal, and he ended up getting me. But yeah, it was a lot of fun to go up against those two guys in my first tournament. Then I went against Trent Sable in the open weight that tournament too. So that was kind of a I got to go against three savages, so to speak, in my first tournament.
Oh yeah, I mean it's, I remember telling people that my first tournament was the U.S. Open, and they're like, "Oh, you went in the deep end like right away," and I was like, "Oh, that was the only tournament I knew about." It was just getting out there to do it. So, you get out there and you face all those really great guys, and it gives you so much experience that you just won't get anywhere else.
Definitely. Yeah, the US, I think the US Open is one of those tournaments where I think it brings out the best in you as a wrestler. I think everybody should do it once just because of, you get to see all the foreign teams, all the international competition. Even if you don't get to go against them, which you more than likely are going to go against someone foreign, but just seeing them in the back, their warm-up routines, how they interact with each other, like if you see the Ukraine team warming up in the back, I mean, they're crazy. Like, they're, dude, they're doing flips, they're rolling, they're going at it with each other, like, in their little fucking jumpsuits.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so you see those guys, you see Biamba kind of doing his thing in the back. He's real quiet, reserved. Yeah, just being around all that talent is really picks you up as a wrestler.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I know just being back there and seeing all the stuff they were doing, like, I remember it was funny because the Egyptian team was working really hard, and then Remy's just sitting there. He's like on the side. But it's just a really cool thing to see. And like you said, I definitely would recommend it to anyone who's looking to compete and who lives in the States. It's definitely something I think you should do at least once, just to get that experience.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope to make it out there. You know, hopefully once this Corona stuff is behind us, a couple of us Ohio guys can make it to the US Open. So did you, was coming to sumo kind of a thing once you tasted it? Was it like, all right, this is it. This is a rabbit hole that I am going to go, I'm going to fall to the bottom of, you know, and hope there's more when I hit the bottom, you know, like, was that something that you experienced?
Yeah, man, it was love at first sight.
Yeah.
From the first practice, I knew it was going to be, like you said, it's going to be a rabbit hole that I'm going to see to the bottom. And then, you know, like Darius says, the US Open was kind of all I knew competition wise.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just being, I feel like being at the LA club, that kind of helped me out a little bit, just because Andrew's always having meetings talking about the Federation and talking about future tournaments, nationals, Georgia, Texas. Like, this is all stuff that he would talk about, you know, on a weekly basis. And when I found out that there was, you know, there was a chance to travel the States and, you know, compete in sumo and nationals, especially, you get to compete to join the world's team.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of where I set a couple goals for myself, and yeah, the world's team is definitely something to chase.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we, you know, we were at nationals and felt like the talent, you know, there's just a lot of talent there. Like, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of good guys, you know, a lot of new people that were there.
Oh yeah. I mean, I know I've only, let's say I've been in a federation now for 3 years. And I mean, I've just seen, even in just those 3 years, just how much it's grown. I don't know about you, Danny, but I just see like the Georgia club just exploded. And then you started getting, you know, started getting more of the Texas clubs going. And then, you know, our club started coming off and John Mauser and Appalachian Sumo. So, I mean, it's getting a lot bigger, and you're just seeing a whole lot of new people getting into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like, Justin's doing great things in Texas with the Dark Circle. Just building consistent people that show up to practice, and then guys that are willing to travel with them to nationals in Georgia and stuff like that. And then you guys obviously got a big club growing, and you guys post all the time with your practices and stuff. And it's just consistent clubs, I think, is going to push our federation forward. But yeah, it's just awesome to see. It's grown a lot. Just established clubs, because back when I know I just started, it was kind of like LA and Georgia was like the only two established, like they had consistent numbers.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, it's awesome seeing it grow. I know Cornelius has new guys too in Florida, so yeah. It's just awesome to see. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really I feel like even just in my short time, like being a part of things, like just since September, it's like, yeah, you're just seeing like people popping out of popping out of everywhere, you know? And, I think that that's the thing, you know, we kind of touch on this almost every interview with people so far, is, you know, all these stereotypes that sumo carries with it, and breaking those down is kind of the constant battle. But I think the more it grows and the bigger it is, and the more visible it is, people start to kind of think like, oh, well, maybe there's more to this than just like, you know, some big dudes. And I'm at this point, like, I have no shame telling people, like, I sumo wrestle. It's like, and if they, you know, and almost every time it's always the diaper, blah, 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 fat guys.
Yeah.
But when they see that you're like passionate about it, if they see that passion consistently, and it's not just something like, oh, that guy like said he liked sumo, but it's like, they see the passion, it kind of changes people's minds. They might not get into it, but they end up respecting you, I think, you know, at the end of the day.
Yeah. And it's a thing of like, everybody that watches sumo falls in love with it. It's a matter of them, taking the time to maybe go see the Open in Long Beach, or, you know, go see the Georgia Open, or go see the Texas Open. It's a matter of them going out to see, you know, just the amount of people that are like passionate about it. Like you said, it's the amount of people that are passionate about it. And
it
gives them a better idea of like, oh, hey, like there's someone like me, some little guy or some, you know, a woman, you know, that is competing. And it's a matter of them going out to see it. And I think, clubs and, like we said, growing the like participation in the States is going to help with perception. But
yeah,
stereotypes is probably the hardest thing to get over.
Yeah.
One of the coolest things I like about our federation is just how diverse the background of a lot of our people are. You know, you have liberals, you have conservatives, you have Latinos, whites, black. I mean, you have the whole gamut of people. But when we're all together, it's just a great time, because we're all just about the love of sumo, you know, so it kind of cuts through all that social and political stuff. It's just about sumo.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what's awesome about it. Cause I mean, we all know by now, after nationals and after most major tournaments, everybody goes out to eat or drink or whatever. And it's just, there's no lines anymore. It's guys that would probably never talk to each other outside of the sport are now breaking bread and doing all that. And it's awesome.
Yeah. I think that's the cool thing. And maybe you can talk about your experience of this, but having sumo being such a tight knit, and partly because it's small right now, but like sumo being such a tight knit community, there's probably some drama. Well, there is some drama that goes on behind the scenes, but like, I think all in all, you can't really afford to have that in a community as small as ours. Like you really have to figure out, like, it's like, we gotta be friends, you know, we gotta be friends on some level. And so I think I've experienced, like I say, I've only been in it since September. I've been a sumo fan for 10 years, but only getting into wrestling seriously. And, I've just experienced such warmth from every person that I've met so far, Cornelius, like that dude, we're going to have him on sometime, and you listeners out there will get to experience, all that is Cornbread. But he just does so much for the sport. And I've seen other people, you know, that are passionate in that way. And, that's kind of rare. I think, like, you probably experience in football. Football is like a very jock kind of sport, you know, and like people are like, you know, people got their swagger and doing their thing. And, I don't want to speak for everybody, but like there's a certain stereotype there too, is like jocular dudes, you know, whatever. But sumo really, I think if you care about things like honor and courage and, you know, those types of kind of traditional values of kind of manhood, you know, or whatever, you know, I think sumo appeals to that type of person.
Definitely. And then just because everybody is so small and everybody's so far and few between as far as clubs and stuff, it's like when you get your hands on someone, you just want to have fun and learn from each other. You want to make sure, hey, next time I see Darius or the next time I see Jake, the competition is going to be even better just because of, you know, the training session we had 4 months ago or whatever. And it's just like you feed off of each other. And like, I know every time I get in the ring with Robert, I want to take advantage of him.
Yeah.
Like, let's go another one. It's just,
yeah.
Yeah. You feed off of each other.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing too, is like because a lot of the better guys that are out there, for at least for a little while, you know, Darius was training by himself. You know, Robert doesn't really have like consistent training partners, it doesn't seem.
At current, you know.
Yeah, at current, but it seems like, yeah, when you want to take advantage of those moments because they're so. When you get that level of competition in front of you, it's like, all right, I want to go and go and go and like, be the best I can be.
Yeah, and that's why I think now that more people are doing like these little over the weekend training camps, I think that's kind of changing the shift in what we want to do as a federation, which is for us ultimately is to grow as the US, just to be stronger at the world's level. So I think like the past year, past couple of years, we've been transitioning from, oh, let me do this one day tournament and have everybody fly out and do an open mat beforehand. So now it's like, okay, let me have guys fly in Thursday, and then we got Friday, Saturday training sessions with a Sunday tournament, or just 3 days of, you know, practice with each other. And I think that's a lot more helpful than if we just showed up and did a competition against each other.
Yeah, I tend to think that that's a good model, I think, going forward. It's like competitions are good, but if we really want to compete on a world stage, and really be competitive with these European powers, I mean those guys, when you watch those Ukrainian guys or those Russians wrestle, it's just like unreal, and we talked with Konishki a little bit about that, and what did you think of his take on it, his advice about the Europeans?
I think it's pretty spot on. I mean, it's just we need to grow more as a country, and I think it starts with the athletes.
Just getting in there and really, all this, and I've said this about myself, is like if I have a goal, I'm 30, I don't know how much like my body, like with my, especially the kind of job that I have, like I don't know how long my body will let me do this, but I hope for a long time. And I don't really have a lot of aspirations to be like on the world, on the world's team or anything, but if I can up my game enough to where I can help somebody be competitive at Worlds, like that's all I want to, I just want to do whatever's best for the Federation. So if I'm wrestling at a level that's enough to like keep that guy on his toes so that when he goes to Worlds, like he'll do well, that's my hope.
Gotcha.
So like you definitely come from a very strong club out in LA. You have great instructors, like you have Yama, who was a former Maegashira ranked wrestler. Now you have Hiroki Sumi, who was formerly Hisho Fuji, who was a Juryo ranked wrestler at one point. You had Takeshi, a university champion. At one point you guys had Biombo before he passed away. As a four-time world champion. So I mean, you just have a lot of quality instructors there. How do you think that's helped you along?
I think for me, it's helped a lot with technique. So like, yeah, the LA club is, I mean, it's a big club. We have consistent numbers in the, like 10, 15 people at practice sometimes. But yeah, the only problem that I've had is that there's never any heavyweights. So it's usually like me working on technique and body position with Takeshi. Takeshi was my, biggest competition for years until we got consistent heavyweights. But to be instructed by those guys, and yeah, they're just teaching me body position and mechanics. And I think me being able to learn the basics as somebody in Japan would or something like that, I think that's helped me a lot. And now that I have Jose, he was at Nationals, won silver. But yeah, Jose is badass and my buddy. Now that he's consistently going to the LA practices, I finally have, and as good as he is, I finally have a top tier heavyweight that we can train with each other. Because he's kind of feeling it right now that I'm out of commission with everything. And he's like, yeah, it's like it's me beating everybody up and then learning what he can on the side from Yama. But
yeah,
because if you, when you don't have someone from your weight class that's good that you can train against, mm-hmm. you kind of forget that you got to kick it up an extra gear. Like, I know when Jose barely got there, it was real rough, like the first couple of matches with me and him, and then we kind of get into a groove, and now we can go back and forth and have fun. And, but yeah, it was, for me, it was a long time. It was a consistency of heavyweights. And then now that I have them, a lot of the flaws that you can't really see wrestling lightweights and middleweights mm-hmm. are, they get exposed. So now when me and Jose finally get to go against each other, we can have sound advice from Yama and Andrew. Now that Takeshi's moving back to move back to Japan, now we can get working advice against people that we would actually compete against.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think you're one of the best technical heavyweights I've seen. I mean, I love your hip thrust. You're very consistent with that, and you drive in and you hip in the people, and it just really gets them up. And you don't see that a lot with a lot of the U.S. heavyweights, that hip thrusting in, you know. So it really shows, you know, your technique, what have you. I think at one point you told me that you try somewhat to model your game after like a Kakiru. And of course, Kakiru is a very technical wrestler, yeah. having won 7 Ginosho or technique prizes. So, I mean, it definitely shows. So, I mean, at current, you're battling cancer. So how's that been in your sumo journey? Because, I mean, it doesn't seem like it's, I mean, you still went out to competitions and stuff and wrestled. So how has that experience been?
Yeah. So it's ups and downs. I got diagnosed about this time last year, August 10th. And for 5 or 6 months, I did nothing, no training, no weightlifting, no running. It was basically like I could walk, and that was about it. They were like, "Yeah, you can do yoga and stuff like that, and but you can't sweat." And I was, for a big guy, that's like damn near impossible. But I went to a tournament out in February. I went to the Philadelphia, forget what it's called, the Philly Annual Tournament or whatever it was called. But I had a break in chemo, and I had this thing. I finally get to see it, but yeah, so it's a line. That's where they give me my chemo and IV and all that stuff. But there was maybe a 4 or 5 week break in like February, March, where I had it out, and so I could compete full go. And I think I went to one practice before the tournament, and then I went to the tournament and it did pretty good. I lost only to Robert, so I think I went I beat everybody else except for Robert. So it was for me, it was just fun to be out and have a distraction from everything, because I think maybe the week after the tournament they put the line back in, and then I was back on the chemo, and then that's kind of where I am now.
Yeah. Do you feel like it's pushed you in ways that that maybe you it's kind of, I don't know how to, it's always one of those delicate things. Like, I, you know, you never feel like you have the right words to talk about something that somebody's going through, you know.
I'm pretty open about it, so go for it.
Yeah, but well, I just do you feel like it's kind of changed your, you talk to people that kind of go through stuff like this, and it kind of changes your perspective on things, you know, to a certain degree, and maybe even kind of matures you in ways that you maybe wouldn't have thought. Do you feel like that's affected the way that you, like, your outlook on the sport in general, and like how you approach it now? Or I don't know if that makes any sense, but.
No, it does. I'm usually a pretty forward thinking guy. So, you know, I've kind of dealt with it the way I've dealt with any kind of problem that I've had. And as far as like a new lease on life or this or that, I can honestly say I've felt really no change.
Sure.
I still have the same goals as far as my sumo career goes and stuff like that. But I think missing nationals and then I had planned to do the consolence cup this year, mm-hmm. but I got delayed another month because of the chemo. So just every time I get delayed and every time I miss, you know, a tournament, it's, you know, it's rough just because I know that, you know, I don't get to see like you guys and the rest of my sumo friends that don't get to compete. Especially when I know that I can do well.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it gets frustrating knowing that you can't do things, even though you like mentally, you really want to, mentally you have the fortitude to do it if you could.
Yeah.
But it's just made me hungry. I know as soon as I'm able to work out again, it's I finally get to work on all the things that I see, like in my past that I've done wrong, or fix the technique and change up the tachi eye, and you know, just work on myself some more. So yeah, sure. It's just, if anything, it's just made me hungry for the future.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're a pretty positive guy, and I think you've kept that throughout this whole process, you know, which I think is great, and it'll be one of the things that I think will get you through it, you know, and to where we can meet in the ring again for sure.
I miss definitely
being able to wrestle you.
do you this could kind of maybe lead into one of the things that's kind of being discussed right now in kind of the USSF and stuff is, you know, people are talking a lot about kind of the ethics of the sport and like how we want to move forward as a federation. As somebody who I know outside of the USSF scene, you're a big sumo fan in general. Like you keep up with the pros. Do you, and you go traditional when you sumo. So, for those who are listening, that means he doesn't wear shorts underneath the mawashi. Are you kind of in love with the sumo culture at large? Is that something that really, when you're, you know, when you put on the mawashi, you're like this is, you know, you feel at home in it. Like, do you feel, yeah, does that make any sense?
It does. Yeah, when I put on a mawashi, I feel like I adopt the, you know, thousand or so years of culture that comes with it. I feel like it's a, you know, it's a badge of honor to be able to wear a mawashi traditional and compete and practice and stuff like that. And yeah, I do follow the basho every month or every other month, but with COVID and everything, it's kind of different nowadays. But yeah, I do watch the basho every time it comes around. And the culture, I think the culture is very important to me as far as why I like the sport so much.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you feel like, you know, cause a lot of things with this, with the ethics stuff is, you know, how much of Japanese culture do we adopt in American sumo, you know, and that's kind of a conversation that's been being had. And so, you know, just for fun, what's your take on that? Like how far do we take it in terms of, respecting the sport, but also making it, you know, there's talk of, you know, we need to make it more accessible to American audiences, or we need to do this or that. You know, what's your feeling about that?
Yeah, I think we should take it as far as to not disrespect the religious aspects of sumo. So I think we're in a good position to where we're kind of preserving the culture without disrespecting. So, I mean, I know when amateur sumo just started, they moved from everybody has to be traditional to now you can wear the black short for religious reasons. I know some of the Egyptians, that, you know, they wear the turbans and the stuff like that for religious reasons.
Sure.
And then, yeah, I mean, we don't throw salt, obviously, because we're on canvas and it would make no sense to purify a canvas ring.
Sure.
But we do the chirichozu, which is, you know, our blessed is a ring, and it's a part of the culture that I think doesn't infringe on, you know, the Japanese religion, like Shinto religion and stuff like that. But I think we're in a good spot now. I think it's a matter of, like you said, finding a way to make it more accessible to American audiences, and it's a way to avoid crossing over religions and stuff that may offend people on our side versus, you know, the Japanese as well.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So, we got a Bosch show that's going on right now.
Right now.
Right now. What it's about to be day 8. Naka be the middle Sunday.
Yeah. So a couple of people in the lead right now. Of course, the goat, Hakuho, is doing what he does. And Asanoyama and Mitake Umi. Asanoyama, probably future Yokozuna. I mean, if all goes well. What do you think of him, Danny?
I'm a huge fan. I love his style. I love how much he's grown as a wrestler. He's learned to use his body a lot better than he has in tournaments past. His left hand outside grip is, he's so long that it's, as soon as he gets that, it's over. I mean, I'm really excited for his future.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be an excellent Ozeki. I hope he doesn't last as an Ozeki long and he gets that Yokozuna promotion, but
yeah,
I love that guy.
Yeah. Who, when you watch sumo, who are the guys that you kind of pick out and you're like, you know, obviously like we all have our favorites and stuff, but from a technical standpoint, are there guys that you really hone in on watching and you're like, all right, I can learn a lot from watching him?
Yeah. So, I know maybe a year ago it was a Kakuru. I tried to model my sumo after him, but I know when I was prepping for the Philly tournament, that one practice, I was kind of leaning more towards, I guess my style suits more of like an Asanoyama or like a, I watch Endo a lot,
mm-hmm.
just because his focus is to kind of get that Maemitsu under and then go from there.
Yeah.
So I watch Endo a lot, and now I watch Asanoyama now that he's up there. Hakuho, obviously, but his technique nowadays is fluctuating so much. So I really focus on Endo because Endo, when he's on, I think he's a very strong wrestler. But he's so inconsistent that it's hard to follow him.
Yeah, I remember when Endo came up, and I was thinking like, oh man, this guy's gonna be like at least, you know, Ozeki, like really strong wrestler. And then it was like, he kind of hit a point where it was just like, man, what? Like, on again, off again. Like, every other match was like a different Endo, you know? No, I think when he, like you say, when he's on, he's deadly, you know, in the ring. And Hakuho right now, I was telling Darius this earlier, like, Hakuho is more fun now to watch than I think he ever has been for me.
Yeah.
Because it's not a question, like before it was always like, all right, he's going to win. But now it's like, how's he going to win? Because he's nursing all these little injuries and you can kind of see it, you know, but he's just doing like very fundamental, like straightforward sumo and ending these bouts as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And it's really fun. Like I've always respected Hakuho a lot and have always enjoyed watching him, but now, but he's never been like a favorite, but now it's like, man, you just do, you know, you just go out on the biggest bang you can go out on, Hakuho. Like I think he's definitely earned it, you know, and he's wrestling great. Really. I mean, in this tournament, I've been really impressed with him.
Definitely. I think he said in I can't find his autobiography to read in English, but, like we see the Chris Sumo videos where he kind of narrates in English Hakuho's autobiography. He talks about how during his climb, Asashoryu was the motivation. He wanted to beat Asashoryu and kind of live up to that name. It was someone he looked up to. He was a friend, contrary to popular belief, mentor. And he said that after he retired, he felt lost. And he said that's probably the hardest part about being a Yokozuna was, you know, he spent all those years after Asashoryu just being so dominant that it was hard to find motivation. And then when Harama Fuji, Kiseno Sato, and all those guys kind of started to keep him on his toes, he's like, yeah, it got exciting again. And I think now he's at a point late in his career where guys like Asanoyama are coming up and they're starting to challenge him a little bit. And I think he likes it.
Yeah. I think he I think he's always going to be, he's a competitor, you know, like he wants that competition. And I think you, like you say, for years, I don't feel like he felt he had it, until Haruma Fuji really started to put pressure on him. And, my favorite guy of all time, Haruma Fuji. That era really will be defined. I think if he had a rival, it was Haruma Fuji, you know, Haruma Fuji has the most wins against Hakuho of any person. So, I think with like 20, was like 21. Yeah. Asashoru has the better record against
has a better ratio,
like head to head against him. But, do you watch a lot of, you know, Darius and I are always trying to find these like training videos of these guys in their stables and stuff. Are you pretty into those videos as well?
Dude, I dig so much. I dig so much into the YouTube. It's like, if I could find one, I'll just keep hitting the suggested.
Yeah.
I started copying, you know, the name, like the Japanese kanji.
Yeah, I did.
Copy like half of that and plug it in and see if something else will show up. But
yeah,
I love all those old training videos. I like when they lead to other stuff, like some old Chiyono Fuji stuff, or I find Asashoru early in his career, Hakuho early in the career. It's just when you find those, it's awesome. Or especially when you find like the stable training videos.
Yeah.
I think you see a lot of different approaches to the game during like a practice versus the tournament.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I mean, that's where you're gonna try out your stuff and see. You don't want to do something in a basho that you've never done before. So really those practices are where they're molding their game, and you can really see that when you're watching them. I remember watching a training video of Otsukaze Bea, Endo's Bea.
Mm-hmm.
When he was first coming up, he couldn't even put his hair in a top knot yet. And I mean, he was just going through people, and you could just see him developing his game and just becoming sharper and better through each match. So, you know, yeah, I love watching those. My favorite by far is the Asashoryu Haruma Fuji training video.
Yeah. Everybody's seen it.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
And as somebody, I started watching sumo right before Asashoryu retired. He won the basho the month that I like first started watching. It was November of 2009, and I think he retired by, I think he was gone by March of 2010. And like, I remember seeing him and just being like, whoa, like he's just so aggressive and like, so, you know, was dominant in his own way, you know, not necessarily in the way that Hakuho was, but his presence was a very dominant presence, you know? And, and man, I rooted for him against Hakuho, you know, because I just thought he was so cool. So do you take us through like your kind of practice, like when you come to practice, like what's your kind of routine in what you try to focus on, you know, coming into a practice, like just take us through a several hour stretch of practice with Danny Avila.
Yeah. So, now that it's, you know, I kind of hope Jose is there and hope, he usually leaves a little early because I know he does some like softball or something. But yeah, so now when Jose is there, the focus is, for me, it's getting my left hand outside grip. And now Yama and Andrew want me to focus on getting my right hand inside. So because when I'm on the belt, that's my better chance of winning. Especially because I'm one of the smaller heavyweights in the Federation. I mean, my competition weight was maybe 320, 330. But even then, like Jose and Robert are 370, 380. I know Robert's pushing 400 now. And it's just I'm outweighed by most of the heavyweights that are worth fighting in the Federation. And yeah, so for me, it's a matter of I need to get on the belt and I need to get in tight. And yeah, so every practice with Jose is going to be me sinking my hips further down, getting lower than he is, burying my head in his chest. It's just the technique against the bigger person. Because if I get stagnant, then they kind of overpower me, the bigger, the stronger that I am.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's focusing on using leverage and technique, and that's pretty much it. I try to get as many matches in with them as I can. Me and Jose, we take turns going against everybody else in the club just because they like to go against the big guy and stuff like that. It gives us a little break. Oh, and we get to work. Yeah, we get to work on technique and stuff. But
well, and it's
that's pretty much it.
It's yeah, and it's helpful to go up against those smaller guys because, you know, if you are competing in open weight, you know, those little guys can surprise you, you know. And it's that's a different, you know, heavy guys wrestling the smaller guys is you kind of have to approach those differently. Like Darius, we're talking about that earlier, and how he approaches. What did you were talking about the first time you went up against a light guy?
So I went up against Pavel. You remember him?
Pavel,
yeah. Pavel, the Polish guy. You know, I went into it just like how I did all my heavy matches, which is, you know, just trying to get that real hard tachi out. And so he just redirected me and it was just like whoop. Then I fell on my face and I was like, oh. So I learned like pretty quick, okay, I gotta be more reserved when fighting against those lightweights, and just kind of use my weight to my advantage instead of trying to just, you know, kind of blast them and they can just move out of the way, you know what I mean? Because they almost always have the speed advantage on you, the light guys. So you really have to start working to your advantage, just like they try to work to theirs.
Yeah, I think the big thing with big guys, like if you watch the pro, you know, if you watch those guys go up against Enho or, you know, Ishioda or any of those lighter guys, you know, the success that the big guys have is if they can keep their feet under them and keep square. You know, they're almost always gonna, and if they can keep them off of their belt, you know, Enho is really good about getting those little twist downs and stuff if he can get underneath and on the belt. But if they can keep him at arm's length and keep square to him, there's almost nothing they can do, you know, at that point, you know, and eventually, you know, you'll see Enho buckle. You know, he always like, he'll get turned where he's kind of like on his back foot and then he buckles and he can't get up, you know, and there's just like, you know, throw him down. So I think that's the biggest thing for big guys going up against the little guys is just keeping that base, you know, firmly planted, squared up, and don't let them get around you, you know, or underneath of you.
Definitely.
Yeah. So what going forward, you know, assuming that you come out of this last round of the chemo and you can get your transplant, cause that's really what you're waiting on, right now is to do that. What's your big goal coming out of that?
Barring any complication, I get the transplant, you know, in the next couple of weeks or so. I think it's 100-day recovery period with some, you know, it's going to be another rough 100 days. So just getting through everything. But yeah, and barring any COVID complications, that the first tournament I'm able to do, I'm flying out. I've already, luckily I've got no real expenses right now. So I've been able to put a lot of money away for that first flight and that first hotel out. So I was hoping it was going to be the Consulate Cup, but that's probably not going to happen. FitCon, obviously not going to happen. But yeah, whatever that first
will happen.
Right.
if COVID doesn't come back with a vengeance.
Exactly. But yeah, whatever that first tournament is of 20 next year, it'll that'll be my goal is to just show up and have a good outing and then go from there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I hope that we can meet in person and in the ring. Although I don't see that outcome being very well for me, but But it'll be fun.
Anything could happen in the ring.
Anything can happen. I feel like you're somebody that, you know, I've talked to you a bunch via our chats with the Doskoi boys. I feel like you're somebody who, you know, out of all the people I've met in sumo, and now just talking to you for this past little bit that we've been talking, I feel like you're somebody that really embodies what I feel sumo is and what it means to me. And I feel like we're in good company. I'm even more excited to meet you in person now. So,
I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, it's always an absolute pleasure talking to you, Danny. I really enjoy talking to you, and I can't wait to see you in person again.
Definitely.
So, have to hit up that Korean barbecue spot again.
Right.
Yeah, is there?
You guys are awesome, man.
I can only imagine that, like, Van Nuys probably has some sweet, food options.
Oh, I mean, with COVID, I haven't really got to explore as much as I used to. So, when you guys are down here, it's definitely going to be driving back down to LA, where I know all the food spots.
I already got a couple
places in mind.
Nice. Yeah. Well, when you're able and when you're ready, you're always welcome to come out to Ohio Sumo and give our guys a go. We'd love to have you for sure.
Definitely, I'd love to make it out to, yeah, I mean, you guys and all the rest of the clubs and just have fun and hang out and spend time in new states, and yeah, it's just, I'm looking forward to getting back out there again.
Yeah, we'll show you all that Cincinnati area and maybe Lexington, Kentucky has to offer.
Hell yeah.
There's a really good place down the road here that does Chonko, and you know, they serve it up on a big, it's like hibachi style or whatever, you know, they serve it up on a,
yeah, when they cook it at your table.
Yeah, they cook it at your table.
Gotcha.
It's really good. We did it when we had our very first practice. We went there, and that was our like celebratory. So it's pretty good. Pretty good.
Awesome.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Danny.
Definitely.
We will hopefully talk to you soon and have you on again sometime.
Sounds good, guys. Appreciate it.
All right.
Ohio Sumo. This